In the studio, I've got Ngaronoa Renata. Good morning.
Ata mare e te whānau whānui o Whaingaroa. Nā mihi ki a koutou I tēnei rangi.
Tēnā koe.
Ai, tēnā koe.
So this is the Kairongoa segment that we do, and we should say what Kairongoa means to start with for a few more weeks, just to get people in the picture.
The word kai refers to not only food that you eat, It has a metaphor of to feed. So a kaiawhina is one who supports, kai ako, someone who teaches. So they're giving in some form, mātauranga. And kai rongoa is to do with a practitioner. In my understanding, I would someone who works mainly with native plant material. Kai rongoa, as one of their gifts.
Are you such a person?
Yes, I would say I favour the native plant world, but I'm not exclusive to the, because the combinations of the plants that have been introduced also have an amazing healing properties.
So we were just talking off the air about species that were introduced to Aotearoa. Were there plants that were introduced and Māori people were like, hey, this is a good plant, we can use this?
Yeah, well, they call those endemic. Endemic are those that were originally here. When our ancestors arrived, I have this desire to sort of feel into what it must have been like for them to walk the land, to discover the plant world, the ngahere, tāne mahuta, you know, of the forest, and experience that growth and in the plant world that were not familiar to them, but had they adapted names from where they had come from for the personality of those plants that they met during settling in this country.
So they had to work out what they could use for what purposes.
Yeah, the thing with a kai rongoa is that a very important part of knowing the properties, the medicinal properties of a plant, is to taste, to chew a leaf, or to the smell. The scent, just to look at the plant, the way that it grows. But those aspects, I guess people would say, well, you know, when you think back, how did a herbalist know whether the plant was useful? They did extensive tasting, and the results of what that was like indicated their medicinal properties.
So that was the laboratory, the testing laboratory was the mouth.
And the scent, yeah. Well, there was many other ways of crushing the plant or really working with it. You could feel the sticky resins.
Yeah.
Engaging with the plant material in various forms that it was growing as a young plant, as a kākano. Kākano is the seed, becoming familiar with the life cycle of that plant was a really important aspect of knowing when it would be available for harvesting to use as a medicine.
It's such a contrast with now when if we want to know about a plant, we'll look it up and read about it. And that's how we typically in the modern world find out about something. But that's...
Yeah,
it's just different, isn't it?
It is different, but it also doesn't give you a thorough, deeper understanding in terms of, like, you really trust your instinct because you don't develop your intuition. I called it instinct, but it's really your intuition for that plant because you haven't experienced it. When you experience a plant, it's like a child, the kākano. If I was to put out kākano, you know, five seeds, you know, how many people, it'd be great fun to do for me, and ask, okay, name these what are these plants? Mm. What are these seeds? You know, what are they?
For that to work for most people, you have to have some very obvious ones.
Like, what's an obvious one?
Apple seeds, orange seeds. You know, we'd be pretty limited, most of us, and having success with that. Mustard seeds, I could do those.
Yeah, I know. And it's a very amazing field when you find yourself going back to that, to the actual kākano of a tree, and really realizing that small seed that you're holding in your ringaringa, in the palm of your hand, will grow that incredibly amazing rākau. You know, that's the wisdom of the seed.
Rākau is?
Rākau. So rākau is the generic name given to the trees.
Okay.
Usually trees. And my understanding, people think it's bushes and grass, but it's not.
Ah, right. Maybe someone from a different end of Aotearoa would have a slightly different definition, do you think? Does it vary a little bit like that? Or did it vary a little bit like that?
The mātauranga for a specific area was held within the tribe by those who were fully immersed in those activities of gathering the rungua it wasn't a common for everyone to do, because it required that expert eye and also when to harvest. So that was held by the indigenous biologist of the tribe, yeah. that knowledge about the... What are we talking about? We're talking about the kākano and the different,
yeah,
the different landscapes. So here in Raglan, in Whaingaroa, it's really important for a kairongoa to, if they place themselves like I do here below this maunga, is to actually understand the maunga and the plant world that is specific to here, because then it gives you a really greater understanding of what medicines, if you are making medicines directly from harvesting.
So what process did you go through when you came here? What process did you go through to learn about the local plants?
So I'm still in that process. However, what I have noted about myself is that I actually can locate, and if somebody said to me, oh, are there any kauri trees here? Are there any pūriri, certain native plants? I said, yes, I know where they are. So my eye has turned to look at the landscape, and I will note that in my mental mind. Oh, wow, there must have been a forest here, because those are the morehu, the remnants. They appear to me, that landscape, like an archaeologist would do,
yeah,
would look at the landscape. I can do that, because I enjoy doing that. I don't see the houses. I see what's growing, and I go, that's a pretty old pohutukawa. Oh, my gosh, what this whole area was like. So I get a sense of what was growing in that area. And names, you know, Pūriri Park, they use names too. There was...
I guess that's an implication of what was there, wasn't it? I don't think about that, but...
Yes, yes, yeah. In abundance.
Yeah.
And also you can, you know, where land has been drained to put roads in for us to get over, get to another part of the land, those have the remnants. There's the remnants like raupō. The humble raupō is one that I've particularly taken notice of in the last few years, because it's diminished. I think I have a realization that people really don't realize its value.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful plant, and it's an indication that you have wetlands, potentially.
Yeah.
But if you keep draining it, you lose that. The rushes, I think they call them bull rushes.
Yeah.
I prefer raupō as a name. it holds a special place because so many amazing things that I've been taught about the raupo that were from my ancestors, actually, as a material of, let's say, for its not only for its growth in the wetlands, but it as a useful material for thatching of roofs or thatching. It's not quite what they did, but
thatching. We get the idea. Yeah, roofs, making roofs. Yeah. So, kākano, the word for seed, which probably has a greater meaning than just seed. That's what you wanted to focus
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I think I've got this beautiful book by Dr. Henemoa Elder, which I was drawn to, and this particular whakatauki says, poipoia te kākano ki a puawai. So poipoia is to nurture, and te kākano ki a puawai, so it will flourish.
Yeah.
And within that, those five words, poipoia te kākano ki a puawai, when you nurture a seed, which you can translate that to the youngest in the family, they will flourish. Puawai is a bloom, is a type of bloom, blossoming, and that's that too holds, you know, they flourish, they have this sense of wellness, hauora,
yeah,
to them. But as a physical appearance, the kākano itself, of course, just recognizing when it actually is produced on the plant, on rungoa plants, and when to harvest, because not all seeds are harvested, like, you know, it's quite a cycle to understand the cycle of when they're ready to harvest, if that's what you're interested in, to create in a local seed bank.
Yeah. So we used to. Well, I think when I think of saving seeds, I think of seeds from the food that we eat. But this is not necessarily the food we eat. This is medicine. So
yeah, heirloom. Heirloom is the key word here.
Yep.
And heirloom means that you save your best seeds for the next generation. Food sovereignty is something I know Whangaroa is really amazing, does amazing, it's amazing kaupapa here. The heirloom seeds are not only for that purpose, for food sovereignty, but they also are for growing. I know there's a lot of discussion right now around using natives, you know, a debate whether we should plant natives and not pines, but pines grow to maturity quicker and they have an economic value, and I'm going, what do you mean? That's not even a discussion, is it? But it is. It's a big discussion right now about green corridors. You know, where do you get those seeds from? Where are they going to come from? Well, they come from the best to come from seeds from that specific area. So an example is if you're creating a corridor, they call them, I think, green corridors, between Maunga Tautari and Pirongia or Karioi, you would be best to find locally grown seedlings, smaller trees, that were from this environment, because they will not only survive, they will flourish.
So they're actually debating that the corridor between those three maunga, what the plants are in it.
No, it's a bigger picture. I'm actually probably talking about in the far north, because pines are quite, they really sold us the pine tree up there, and it's really sad because, yeah, I mean, who cares?
That tree is such a symbol of colonialism, right to it, down to its tendency to colonise areas outside of its fence line, you know. like the problems they have now, having to go and kill off wilding pines that are taking over other areas. It's such a symbol, isn't it?
Well, a lot of money is going to be poured into this from the government, and you know, into Taiao forestry. Forestries, yeah, they had their say and they did very well, thank you very much, in the far north, and they still are. And but the, yeah, that's another whole kaupapa.
Should we sidestep that one this morning?
To do with, you know, I have very clear views around around natives. Should we plant back natives? Yes, of course we should. There is so much life that can, the ecology of one tree is extraordinary. What are we saving? We're not just saving our native species, as in the plants and the trees that are ko, but there's all that life that lives fully within that is sustainable lifestyle. But I think I was also wanting to mention here about the harakeke. I've seen a lot of harakeke around, and they do plant it a lot on the now on the banks, on the main huarahi, main roads.
Yeah,
using the flax, and flax is not just flax. It's actually also another area of. There are different varieties that have different properties, not only medicinal, but they are used as a fibre for making kākahu clothing and so forth. And so, and they have very specific names, and they are still known today thanks to Manaaki Whenua Land Care, who have a very large collection of that they look after and observe and write notes on. And
so there's more than one or two species.
Yeah, there just happens to be more than one or two.
I'm just thinking there's one species in particular that we see everywhere and gets planted everywhere. And presumably, I know when Europeans arrived, there was a big industry of flax and harvesting flax to make rope.
That was actually a very specific flax.
Yeah.
Because it had lots of mukka in it, and mukka is the inner fibre, so the flax strippers. There's a machine that was used called a flax stripper, and so the outer green part of the row, the harakeke, was stripped, and this beautiful rope-like mukka was right there, and that's what they were after. So we still have some of those, the remnants of that particular harakeke. One is in Kaituku, because of course there was a flax mill right there. You sort of can see, because there's a lot of flax there, and it's really strong. It's got a really, yeah, it's not easy to cut. It's not like you could just take a kitchen knife and cut it. It needs a really good, strong marepi to actually harvest, because it's so strong.
Was that plant the same one that we see everywhere now, or was it a different version of flax?
No, it's a different version. Okay, right. And that one with the mukka in it, mukka is a highly regarded New Zealand silk. That's actually its English name. It's right. New Zealand silk. It is a very beautiful, fine, when it's made in a certain manner for creating that silky feel. However, that's not what they harvested it for in the flax mills. It was used primarily, or my understanding was, for rope.
Yeah.
It's still probably on the ships today that they harvested it for all those years ago. It lasts, we won't say forever.
Yeah, nothing's forever.
We can't do that. But harakeke I have a lot of time for, and I wish they wouldn't just carelessly plant it and think, oh yes, well, you know, we'll fill that gap. It has a...
It's more than a gap filler in your eyes.
It's, you know, it brings the manu, and it's so true, you know, wherever you plant it, when the puawai, the kōrari are flowering, the manu come to feed from it. They know what's good for them, don't they? They know where they can get a sweet nectar. You know, so it's a
that must be due to come. Is that coming up soon? The flowers?
Oh yes, yes. The tui are right there. They're telling us and talking away and enjoying the sweet nectar of the harakeke right now. Yeah, it's awesome, beautiful.
So I guess you might have already answered this, but what's special about the harakeke to you? We've kind of talked about the European usage.
I was thinking of I can't think of it actually. There's a French word for a special person who makes clothing. Atelier? No, I won't try and remember it online without clarifying that. I saw somebody, I think she was a French, and she was the one that made all the clothing for this famous fashion designer. I saw this movie. And I said, that's what my people do. That's what my ancestors do. They sit and they weave beautiful garments. And I could see the relationship of attention, just the beauty of working with this fiber. That's probably where I sit. No, I don't sit there and do that. No, I don't. I have some skills in that way, but I appreciate the harakeke on for what it is. I have a small pā harakeke myself, which I look after. It requires a bit of care to keep it really looking really well and pruned so that it's healthy. And then I use those special rau for making a whole range of different items, if you like, taonga. So I love it for its fibre, muka, the muka that it has, and just for its scent. And it's medicinal. It's medicinal. I mean, weaving, raranga is a medicinal activity. You know, it's at any age. Little ones can grow up around it if they have the opportunity to grow up with it around. I mean, hey folks, it's not plastic, you know, and it's actually not harmful for people.
Safe. I remember I lived in Tokelau when I was a child, and we were like the only Palangi family, so life was fairly traditional still there. And I remember the woman sitting around and weaving mats.
And that's what they did, you know,
yeah,
and they
so
and it, the maths,
that, yeah.
And yeah, and that's the attention they paid to it, and kind of that the attention that they gave to what they were doing as a collective, and then suddenly you had this mat, this beautiful mat you could sit on.
And it's not a solitary activity, like that's really, I think that's really key.
Oh, it's the community,
yeah,
you know, the
yeah,
hapuri,
yes,
looking after each other and the stories that would be shared in that way, actually getting, you know, it's a big job to weave. It's a really big job to do it on your own. Yeah, you can be a loner, but much more powerful to share that.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that there's, like, we have the experience here, sometimes we'll make a kete, and we will make it with the green flax, and we'll see it kind of shrinks a bit. And I know that in Tokelau they had processes to treat. Was it mostly they made a lot of mats out of pandanus?
Oh yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but they had a lot of a process to treat it before they got to weaving it, so that it was no longer changing its shape and size. I presume Māori weavers also had
absolutely.
Had that.
There are some very important stories around how the hot pools were used.
Right.
For the harakeke to, it gives it a different life if it's been blanched.
Yeah.
Blanched in the hot water. Now, of course, we use gas with a pot. And
right, got some modern technology. Yeah.
And boil the water and don't try and use tongs to do that. same job that they did, and also, you know, the dyeing of it was, there were areas that were known only to the weavers, where it would, the harakeke was placed for that, for the deep black colour. That was, you know, special mud. Yeah. Mud, I mean, you know, you can actually buy mud.
I
found that.
Yes, it's the modern world for you. You can buy mud.
You can actually buy mud. I mean, I'm really talking here about, I went to Rotorua, and I was just so curious. I went, oh my gosh, that's mud from here, and it's for sale, and it's all packaged up. What's its special quality? And I thought, oh, I'm sure it's got many special qualities, but no, I'm not going to buy it.
And Tokelau was an atoll, so everything was just white, dead coral. That was the ground was that was made of. There wasn't mud, and I think they used to put the pandanus in with something rusty, in the water with something rusty, and it would make it go black.
Yes, of course, there was. They knew the science of that thoroughly, and the red colours, the golden colours. There were a few colours. It wasn't just red and black. There were other colours.
There were other colours?
Yeah. There was golden.
Yeah.
Golden as well. And of course, that leads into the. We have along here, Ki te taha o te moana, the pingao, which is a beautiful golden colour that was woven also, that could be made into kete. And the colour of that is the colour of a. Yeah, in the morning. Morning rising, okay. Golden sun.
Yeah.
Like that.
So, folks, we're talking to Ngaronoa Renata, and kākano, seed, and harakeke, the topics for today. And seed, we call it seed saving now, was a real key to life, I guess.
I think it should be.
And still should be. Yeah,
I think it should come back in a different way, that we really pay attention to exchanging seeds locally before they're, you know, because they're strong seeds, they're from here, and then, you know, those seed banks are extremely important to us going forward. There's many in terms of foods have been lost because we didn't bother. Corn, the ancient corn, is nearly lost here in Aotearoa.
There was corn here?
There was corn. Corn was our people had corn. They had a corn seed.
Wow, I had no idea
about
that.
Yeah, kanga, and that's nearly lost. But you'll find somebody may even be listening and go, I've got one of those multicoloured corns. Multicoloured.
Oh, I've seen them around. I didn't know they were local. I presumed they were from somewhere else.
In the far north, there was. So those kind of treasures or taonga treasures, you don't really know about unless you're visiting someone who's living somewhere in a valley, you know, up in the far north, say, in my case, and they will go, oh, yes, I've got some of this. And you go, I've never seen that before. And they go, oh, yes, we grow it here. And you go, what do you mean here? And they go, here, in this valley.
And just this valley.
And that's it. You just learn that because you're there at that time. It's not in your local stores, because that's not how they think about it. They think, well, we just grow it. We grow it because we eat it.
Do you take a seed and try and grow it in your area when you've been to that valley?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I really enjoy that aspect of it's quite natural for me to be going, oh, what have I got here? Right, I better put that in the ground. See
what you get.
Yeah, see what I get.
Yeah.
I have an idea of what I'll get, but yeah, it's always the magic of like, oh, okay. It's a magical experience to grow kākano, and I hope that we continue to lead. I feel that whangarō leads in many ways in terms of food sovereignty.
Yeah.
I think we just got a beautiful way of ensuring that continues intergenerational. Yeah, but we've got to keep doing it. Just keep on, you know, doing that sharing of those, so that we've got them really, really available.
So, other subjects entirely. Your Māori language classes, can they happen?
I have been able to, yes, and I have a class on Wednesday mornings at this point at the Old School Arts Centre. So I've been able to continue that this term, not for the full term, but to the end of a cycle.
Yeah.
A cycle, and I'm looking forward to the reo classes, but going more into total immersion, having a total immersion evening or day.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. Well, I'm trying to work it out because, you know, the Old School Arts Centre is also a really cool place to have a reo class.
Yeah.
Yeah. With ngaro no.
Total immersion. How many people are ready for that?
Oh, there's quite a few.
Yeah.
I think, you know, with all respect to the work that was done here by the Rōpū who led Te Ātārangi at the Marae, people are really wanting to return to that shock treatment where they go, oh, because it's in short bursts, really. And yeah, it's like going into a studio and you're focusing on a song, really. You know, and that's the song. You sing the song and you repeat it so that you become fluent in it.
Yeah.
So in that sense, can be an enjoyable experience too, where you go in and you're aware that, okay, this is what I'm here for. I'm here to tune in, turn my ears on to the reo that's being spoken.
Yeah.
And that exposure for a very short time, really. So if you think of it like that, like learning a song, you know, and I want to become fluent in that song, then you must spend time immersed in it.
Yeah.
So we can do waiata too, songs, to do now, that.
To kind of shift the brain into a different place for a time, like that makes it, like this is what I'm thinking, like,
well, we're immersed in English so much that we forget that there are other beautiful reo. You know, I've from other countries as well. You know, we're actually quite used to hearing them and might not like people speaking in their own tongue when they're around us. We think it's rude. I've heard people say that, and I said, well, you know, aren't they lucky? They're probably bilingual. They're probably trilingual.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we should be used to a little bit of that here in Raglan.
Oh, yes, in Raglan. Yes, of course. We enjoy that. We enjoy that sharing of words of kupu. With Māori, I'd like us to see more depth in our exchange of the language so that we become more fluent in sentences. But, you know, we'll continue to my jam will really be with the rangatahi, the young people and the babies, the mokopuna.
So so the class that you've started up again, is that a continuation? That was whatever was happening before the lockdown.
Yeah,
you're halfway through, so you
I've been able to secure that one. My other class I wasn't able to continue on the Tuesday evenings.
Okay, but you will be starting up some other ones.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
But I'm not in the Mara doing food sovereignty.
Oh, okay, right.
I'm not in the garden.
Yeah.
Mara kai.
All right, I don't know. Thank you for your time this morning.
Very welcome.
Good to chat. So glad to have you in the studio this time, and long may that continue.
Yeah, in the studio. Kia haumaru koutou, koutou ma. Be safe.